7th, 2019 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Keelan. Could you please call the roll?
Good morning. U Daily, Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Hardesty. Wheeler.
Here. And now we'll hear from Robert on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. If it does not, you may be ruled out of order. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you very much. First up is communications. If you could read the... Actually, today I think we have all the Grey Panthers. Would you like to come up together?
Sure.
All right, why don't we just call... call them all. If you want to just grab two more chairs from the front row. And
three.
There's just three of you today? Very good.
Michael's in Dallas, Texas, and Holly's been sick all week. So.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. All right, well, you will do ably, the three of you. I have no doubt about it.
Okay, I'll read it into the record.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, Keelan.
1086, request of Sally F. Fronsman Cecil to address council regarding Portland Grey Panthers. 1087, request of Jennifer Young to address council regarding Portland Grey Panthers. 1088, request of Holly Hansen to address council regarding Portland Grey Panthers. 1089, request of Michael Burleson to address council regarding Portland Grey Panthers. 1090, request of Lou Church to address council regarding Portland Grey Panthers.
Great. Good morning. Thank
morning.
You.
Morning. Okay.
Sally.
I thought you were going first, Jennifer. You want me to?
Okay,
that's fine. Well, usually I have pretty targeted remarks, but then I'm reading.
What's your name in the record first?
Oh, sorry about that. Sally Fronsman-Cecil. I should know. I've
Thanks,
been here
Sally.
Enough. Any rate, I usually have pretty targeted remarks, but then, of course, I'm reading, and I can't really look at people and make eye contact. I'm feeling a little more friendly today than I was days when I was thinking about this. But, you know, I've kind of been really feeling like the specific things I bring, maybe they're not always things you can do anything particularly on, but I'd like you to take a stance on them or something like that. And I am just utterly frustrated as an advocate and an organizer. I feel like I identify so much with the younger people or even the Extension Rebellion people, because trying to make any traction with regular government or people who have, at least we think, control of the money and the projects, though it's a lot, obviously a lot more complicated than that. And I try to avoid that kind of generalization as much as possible. On the other hand, I am a person who strongly believes that we need some real paradigm shifts in how we deal with things on so many levels, on people who are unhoused, on the situation of elders in general safety, just the way the society has treated us in terms of housing, environmental issues, climate change. And it seems to me like a lot of times we have decided, not just you, but as a culture, as a society, not to do what needs to be done, not to take the bull by the horns, not to see that we can't forever do business as usual, expect anything to be different. And that is so frustrating to me. And it's like, I don't know what we can even do as citizens to push that way. Because, you know, I mean, electing officials, people are going to take the stances they take as elected officials, even when they're running. And I also think people don't always understand what needs to be done, how much it needs to be done, and I don't know how much leaders can still be elected as leaders if they take the stand I feel people need to take in leadership. And you're among some of the leaders I can talk to, right? And so I would like really urge you to really think very hard about how much things really need to be changed. Maybe you can't not do or support the projects that are out there. Just for example, though, the thing that I brought up last time, you know, why would we be allowing and not speaking up against expanding the airport and numbers of people arriving here when we know we've got to cut back those things? I think I'm pretty much at the end, so I'm not going to start another point.
Well-timed.
I am at the end. I never can read that thing.
is it hard to see on that side?
But it's probably that now I'm making eye contact, I can't see it very easily.
All right, and that's good insight. I mean, maybe we could actually slide that a little closer. Good.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Appreciate your testimony today. Thanks for coming in. Good morning.
Good morning. My name, is Jennifer Young, and I'm speaking today in support of the older senior women who are facing homelessness. The programs that are out there are very limited. I only know of one specifically that's run by Catholic Charities. I don't have drug or drinking problems. I just needed housing. My handicap started in childhood. I'm chronically ill. I have severe asthma with COPD. Never smoked in my life. The programs that are out there, the one that I'm currently in, has another social service organization, and I find myself being targeted living in my housing situation. Fortunately, I have my own entrance, so I don't have to interact with these other people. My concern is I moved into housing not having a language even to describe drugs or some of those behaviors, and I'm being exposed to just obnoxiousness. I'm also requesting that these facilities be staffed 24/7, and people will object to that who are funding these. But it needs to be written into funding because people have changed. They're not the same anymore. I would prefer to have housing with older single women together and not split up and not be the null set where we are being a buffer for another social service organization. Right now, the only thing I'm aware of in town, and somebody can correct me, is Jean's Place. And that's a shelter. Mm-hmm. I'm requesting housing. Just recently, within the last week or so, we got tagged, and the message on the side of the building said, human garbage. And I'm very aware as a boomer. I don't think that was targeted at me, but it was targeted at the other organization that is in the building. And I was very upset. Hopefully the police will take care of it and find out who's doing this. It was at a location that you can't see it from the street, and it's specifically targeted to the people in the house. So I am aware of that. At the same time, I've had a paycheck stolen. I've had mail stolen. And it's not acceptable to be a target as an older senior woman in housing. We have to have more funds, more resources for those who don't need social services. Just housing.
Yeah, that's an important perspective, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. It is startling that the fastest growing segment of the homeless population is the 70 plus contingent. So you're representing the vanguard of the fastest growing segment of our homeless population.
Yeah,
people don't tend to think of that, right?
No, and rightly so. The people who are victims of domestic violence get the first choice in housing. Mm-hmm. But people like me who are chronically ill and really should not be on the street, we're being left behind. And I'm 60 this year, and I don't think anybody my age who's in a building that's just gone condo and can't afford it, they shouldn't be out on the street. Mm-hmm. So Street Roots and those organizations are not really there to support us. So I think there needs to be more done.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Good morning.
Morning. I'm Lou with Portland Gray Panthers. I want to thanks Sally and Jennifer for talking today for Panthers on social justice issues, especially housing. I want to touch on a few think globally, act locally parameters. First, on impeachment. It's about time. In addition to the Ukraine bribery and obstruction articles, we note with dismay that USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue has proposed a $4 billion cut to SNAP, or food stamps, specifically targeted, according to the Oregonian, against seniors and disabled folks. Shame on Trump. Shame on Sonny Perdue. Second, here in Portland, Gray Panthers has hosted a series of community forums and candidate forums. In the spirit of Thanksgiving, we want to thank speakers who have volunteered to talk with us at Portland State and helped organize that. James Posey, Michelle DePass, Joanne Hardesty, Albert Lee, and E.D. Montaigne. Carmen Rubio, Candace Avalos, and Robin Castro. Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, Michael Dembro, and Lou Frederick. Aja and Cupid on the mayor's staff, and Ted Wheeler. Amanda Fritz, Teresa Koloff, Jamie McLeod-Skinner, Randy Blazak, Mingus Maps, Ozzie Gonzalez, and Ellen Rosenblum. In addition to opposing proposed food stamp cuts, we also support the Pestini boycott to protest the eviction of the free hot soup program at Directors Park, Teachers Park, following the Nick Fish-affiliated Fair Access to Parks Committee. On housing, the Portland Business Journal reports that Portland is the eighth richest city in Estados Unidos, with an average household income of $70,000. Yet houselessness persists, as we know, amidst our housing emergency. In A Tale of Two Cities, was Charles Dickens just talking about London and Paris, or prognosticating about Portland, Oregon, circa 2019? On transit, Portland Gray Panthers and Transit Riders Union urge everyone to turn out this Black Friday, November 29th at 12 noon in Pioneer Square for the youth-led protest against TriMet's racist, fascist, fare inspector system, protesting the Street Roots vendor fined recently almost $200 for not beeping his card often enough. In addition, requiring the TriMet Board of Directors, including Ozzie Gonzalez, to be elected by voters, not appointed, is one way to increase accountability and transparency. Last but not least, there's Sally's idea, Sally Fransman Cecil's idea, a Gray Panthers holiday party on Saturday, December 14th at 12 noon at Bipartisan Cafe, Southeast 78th and Start, with the theme of joy, hope, and resistance.
Thank you. Appreciate your being here today.
And I would just like to say to Nick Fish, Jamie, in Senator Merkley's office was instrumental in getting me on disability, and I believe he went to work for you.
Oh, that's a very, very nice of you to say, though. Jamie Dumphy.
Tell him Jennifer Young says thank you.
Yeah, he was working with Senator Merkley, and then we were lucky to hire him, and he's now my senior policy director.
He just happened to take my notice and help me. It took probably 8 weeks to get on disability.
Thank you. You know what? People who work behind the scenes often don't get recognized, and so thank you very much for acknowledging his role. And happy holidays.
Thank you, all of you. Next up, 1091, this is a second reading.
Authorize the second amended and restated visitor facilities intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County and Metro.
Colleagues, this is a second reading of a non-emergency ordinance. We've already had a presentation. We've taken public testimony. Is there any further discussion before
Mayor,
we
I have a question.
Out? Commissioner Fish.
And I wasn't here for the prior discussion, but I've been briefed. And I don't say this to be provocative or flip, but does this now resolve the issue?
Yes.
So you can tell us that we have the concurrence of Multnomah County and Metro on this amendment?
I can tell you that.
Well, it's taken a long time. There's been many twists and turns, but congratulations for bringing this home. and it will free up money for a very important cause. So thank you.
You got it. Please call the roll, Keelan.
Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor, and your staff, particularly Kristen Dennis and the host of city attorneys. Thank you, Carlisle, for working on this. This is really significant for many reasons. One, it puts money into renovating city-owned facilities using tourist tax dollars. It also, for the first time, dedicates some of those resources to permanent supportive housing, so providing services to the people who live in the affordable housing that's getting built. So it's truly significant, and I appreciate your dedication and perseverance. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I'm very excited about this as well, and I want to thank our government partners in this, particularly Lynn Peterson and former Metro President Tom Hughes. Deborah Cafori, who's the chair of Multnomah County. I want to thank our team as well, including Kristen Dennis, my chief of staff, as well as Elizabeth Edwards, who is very actively engaged in this. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, our legal team has spent a considerable amount of time on this. The bottom line is this allows us to use some of the economic prosperity that's taking place in the community today to be dedicated towards the support services that would be associated with the supportive housing that we're creating through the housing bond. So that includes things like addiction treatment, mental health services, job training, and the like, the things that will help people who come off the streets, those who are the most chronically homeless, come off the streets into our supportive housing and ensure that they get resources that they need to help keep them successful in that housing. This will amount to up to approximately $5.2 million per year. It'll take us a while to ramp up to that level, but it's a very good start and a good agreement. And I'm very, very grateful to all of our partners to coming to the table for what I think is an important issue. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. 1092, please. Also a second reading.
Assess properties for sidewalk, curb, and or driveway repair for the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Colleagues, this is also a second reading of a non-emergency ordinance. We've had a presentation and public testimony. Any further business on this item? Seeing none, please call the roll, Keelan.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item is number 1093.
Adopt a set of priority values, expectations, and the recommended option to guide the design and implementation of the City of Portland's Bull Run filtration projects.
Colleagues, if memory serves me correctly, we have already had a lengthy presentation on this. We have already taken public testimony. The record has been closed, but we continued this conversation for the purposes of the vote. Does that square with your recollections?
Well, yeah, we had a discussion last week, and so today's just the vote.
Very good. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
I will continue to acknowledge the difficult situation that we're in. We are under federal requirement to treat our water. Although we've made efforts to avoid that requirement for 10 years, the time has come for us to move forward with filtration. That decision was made in 2017. Some people say that we are moving too fast, but 2 years of due diligence is a significant investment on project scoping. Almost a year ago, in December of 2018, Council agreed to move forward with the several foundational decisions to address the federal mandate, including the location, type of technology, capacity, and procurement method. Some of these Council decisions have been modified slightly to reduce costs, but the location and the type of technology has remained the same and is still causing frustration from some members of the public. As a reminder, Council had a work session on this in September, and then we had a robust conversation with the Portland Utility Board and the Citizens Utility Board. And so here we are at the end of November after 2 months of intensive review with this vote. And I appreciate everybody who's put in so much time and effort. The resolution that guides the design of this plant to use filtration as the means of to treat our water has taken many things into consideration, including natural disasters such as fires in the Bull Run watershed. Filtration will allow us to recover the damage to the water from a fire more quickly. The plant will treat the water in a way that does not change the flavor or odor. Choosing this course of option, of course, impacts rates, and the Water Bureau staff have been researching alternative funding avenues. We are hopeful that the Water Infrastructure Finance Act, or WIFIA, will mitigate the impact to the increase in rates, working with our partners at the Environmental Protection Agency to achieve this goal through a loan with low interest and flexible payback options. Thanks to Senator Jeff Merkley, who passed the authorizing legislation and helped secure Portland's invitation to apply. Note that we have sought this invitation twice before without success. The probability of getting this WIFIA loan is one of the key reasons I believe the Council is being wise in moving forward now. $850 million is a huge investment. Kristen Dennis, the Mayor's Chief of Staff, was on the Lakos Wego City Council when they built the filtration plant that serves 90,000 customers. It cost $252 million. Our plant will serve 1 million people. So I know we all got sticker shock, but it's actually that comparison is another reason that I believe this is a good investment. The location of the site is another point of consternation for nearby neighbors, despite the Water Bureau having purchased it in 1975. It is a site that will likely be hit with less impact during the Cascadia earthquake, which is one of the main reasons we have chosen this site as the location for the treatment plant that supplies water to those 1 million people and growing. However, this does not mean that this area will not be impacted at all, which is why we are increasing the seismic resiliency of the pipes in that location through the design option in this resolution. We are working with the neighbors of the site to mitigate impacts to the community. Although some neighbors may choose not to participate, we will continue to work with those that will in partnership with the designer and our staff. The Portland Utility Board and the CUB, their Citizens Utility Board, have reviewed the project and support moving forward and commit to working with us to mitigate rate impacts for low-income customers. We've discussed the recommended option with council staff and with council members. My staff presented this at the November 1st meeting with council chiefs of staff, and I've spoken with each of my colleagues in and out of council chambers as well. I appreciate my colleagues' willingness to engage on this matter. As we know, the impacts of this decision will carry on after I have left this office. However, as a reminder, that is not for another year and 1 month, so I will be continuing to work on it for the remainder of the time that I'm assigned the Water Bureau. Although we're voting on the design option and contract today, there will be many opportunities in the future for this council to make decisions regarding this project. First, this resolution commits the Water Bureau to report to council on any updates related to the project no less than once a year, while reporting to the Portland Utility Board every 6 months. We will, of course, forward those reports to the council as well, and we're happy to hold a presentation or a discussion at work session at any time. In April of next year, we will come to council with an item related to the WIFIA application. We will have a better idea of what this project will cost with the 30% design milestone in the middle of 2021, at which point the council may choose to intervene again. I have directed the Water Bureau staff to work towards a no-frills facility, no interpretive center, no fancy finishes except landscaping and exterior improvements designed to fit into the surrounding neighbors area. My office and Water Bureau staff are committed to providing as much information as council needs to make sure this process is transparent and accountable. We recognize that we have some trust building to do again after Commissioner Fish had done such a great job repairing that trust over his 5 years with the Bureau. I thank the members of the public who have written in, testified, and attended many meetings. Thank you to the Portland Utility Board members who were able to provide thoughtful analysis and recommendations on this project very quickly. Thank you to my Chief of Staff, Tim Crail, and Senior Policy Advisor, Christina Nieves. Thank you, Deputy Director Gabriel Solmer, Project Manager Dave Peters, and Finance Director Cecilia Hune, for their input and presentation on these tough decisions, and Jamie Cootie and Bonita Oswald, who are doing the public engagement and are here. Thank you. And really, thank you to Director Mike Sturr, whose expertise and actual experience in emergency management for city infrastructure over 40 years has helped to guide this decision. Aye.
Fish.
I have a prepared statement, but since 1093 and 1094 are related, I will give it on the next vote. On this item, I vote aye.
Wheeler.
So I'll just give a brief statement. Number one, this is one of those votes where, as an elected official, there's not a whole lot of upside potential, but it comes under the category of necessary. And I have asked numerous questions about whether this is the right option, whether there are other options that cost less, whether there are other options that substantially address the issues that are of concern to us. And I have also tasked my chief of staff with calling around to other people who have impartial views about the different types of systems that are available to the city of Portland and whether or not this is the right path for us to be on. And in all cases, the answers have come back that the answer is yes, the filtration strategy is the right strategy for us to pursue for the long term. And that's how we need to look at this question. This is a long-term question in terms of what is the best interest of the community and maintaining a safe and pure water supply. I also want to put on the record today that the cost of this project will more than likely go up. The cost of construction, the cost of labor are going up, and so it is my expectation that the cost of the project will go up. In addition, as we get into the design phase and we refine the design over the next several years, there will undoubtedly be things that will be changed. So I want to be clear to everybody that what we have, I believe, is a 30% confidence level on the estimates today.
No, we don't.
Where are we?
Not even that.
Not even that. So we are in the early cost estimate phase. So I want to be very, very clear about that, that this council has not nailed down a cost estimate for this project. Finally, Mike Sturr does deserve our accolades on this. He and I had some differences of opinion about some of the early estimates. He has been very forthright and forthcoming in his answers to my questions subsequently. I feel like the Water Bureau has done an outstanding job of providing me the information I need in order to be confident about taking this vote today. And with that, I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. The resolution, I'm sorry, is adopted. 1094.
Authorize a contract with Stantec Consulting Services, Inc. for design services for the Bull Run Filtration Project in the amount of $51 million.
Second reading, call the roll.
Fritz.
So we're absolutely confident that this is not to exceed amounts on this design contract, and it's for design services for the next 10 years. We need this contract in order to be able to get to a better estimate of the cost. And I'm convinced that this company, which has done many of the filtration plants around the state and elsewhere, is going to do a fabulous job. There was a presentation by one of their staff at one of the community meetings that I thought was outstanding. And I'm looking forward to getting some more specificity. Aye.
Fish.
So thank you, Commissioner and colleagues. These two items today are hard votes for me. Not because I don't believe filtration is the right approach, and not because I believe the right option has to be the cheapest option, but because I was very troubled when we learned that the cost estimate had increased, and now that it's almost doubled, I'm concerned about what the next update will be. I deeply appreciate Commissioner Fritz's comments about accountability and the various ways those measures are written into both of the matters before us today. I also appreciate her reminder that this is not the construction contract, that what we are approving, that we are not approving the project at this point, just the design contract. But I want to be very clear. We are not writing a blank check to the Water Bureau. I expect construction cost estimates to be locked in when the construction contract comes back. And if they're not capped, I'll offer an amendment to cap them. Thank you, Commissioner and the Bureau, for your commitment to transparency and accountability and to your commitment to keeping the council engaged at all the major decision points. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I think you guys have said it best. Without the design, we don't know what the project actually is, so we need to engage this part of the process. I vote aye. Ordinance is adopted. 1095.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Arbor Lodge Kenton Sewer Rehabilitation Project number E10978 for an estimated cost of $5,350,000.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. The Bureau of Environmental Services manages the city's stormwater and sewer infrastructure. This project in the Arbor Lodge and Kenton areas will rehabilitate over 2 miles of aging and deteriorating pipes. Here today to give a brief presentation is Daniel Boatman and Joe Dvorak, from the Bureau of Environmental Services. Mayor, since we have such a light schedule today, I've encouraged them to take the full hour to make the presentation today. Who's going to take it away? Joe?
This is James Allison. I'm standing in for Joe this morning.
Thank you.
And I made a note that I was going to keep my comments brief, but...
I like the way you think.
Thank you.
Thanks, James.
Good morning, City Council. It's good to see you.
I'm sorry.
I coordinate the large-scale sewer rehabilitation program. I'll keep my comments brief by saying this is standard work for the Bureau, providing a reliable sewage collection system. The Bureau initiated this program...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Asena Lawrence had given me an updated set of remarks that actually lists you. In my customary way, I put them off to the side and ignored them, so I apologize. And welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. The Bureau initiated the large-scale program 10 years ago with the following principles. Efficiency, to consolidate individual sewer repair projects into larger neighborhood-level, larger geographic-scale projects. Strategy, to systematically assess and then cost-effectively repair Portland sewers before they fail. Planning, to intensively coordinate our work with other city infrastructure bureaus that work in the right-of-way. And lastly, engagement, to develop early and continuous public outreach to our customers and others who are affected by sewer service and the disruptions that occur during construction. The projects take 2 years to develop to get to the point of construction contract procurement. The coordination work is detailed and intensive in terms of working across multiple bureaus and with the neighborhood at this larger scale. And with that, I will turn it over to the project team, Daniel Boatman as the project manager, Matt Goff as the BES community outreach lead.
Thank you, James. Is it showing up there? So the Arbor Lodge project is in North Portland. You can see it outlined there. Kind of hard to see the color on the screen, but there's also shows some of the other projects in the area that have happened recently or are currently happening. This project has a little over 2 miles of pipe, so around 12,500 feet of pipe, ranging in size from 6 inches to 30 inches in diameter. The average age of these pipes is around 83 years old, so a lot of them are near the end of their life. We're also going to be reconstructing about 3,000 feet of service laterals to homes and around 1,400 feet of sanitary sewer extensions. This project will utilize a variety of construction methods, both traditional open trench excavation and trenchless rehabilitation options. It's about 50-50 between the open cut and the trenchless options.
And when you say trenchless rehabilitation, in plain English, what does that mean?
That means it's construction methods that will reduce the footprint and excavation required in order to install a new pipe or rehabilitate the existing pipe.
And the picture here is of what?
That is cured-in-place pipe where they insert a flexible liner inside the existing pipe, so they're able to do it without doing any excavation and minimize surface disruptions.
Terrific.
I'll turn this slide over to Matt Goff, our community outreach.
Thanks. We have been engaged with the neighborhood, Portsmouth, Kenton Ann Arbor Lodge, since the beginning of design. We've outreached to, our mailing list has over 11,000 people. We currently use Nextdoor.com to communicate, which there's about 9,000 recipients of project updates that we have on using that. We are always asking people to sign up for our email updates. That's a growing list. It's currently at 190. We also have done focus outreach for properties within a 2-block radius of any night work locations and to address any concerns. Any feedback was reported to the noise office. We had about 4 comments on that. And we've also done some focus outreach to businesses along Greeley and along Lombard that are immediately next to sewer locations.
Thank you for that update, and you look great in the hard hat. Does your outreach include working with local businesses to anticipate peak holiday season events and avoiding disruption?
Yes, it does. I mean, we definitely honor the moratoriums that are in place by PBOT. We're really trying to, we want to work with businesses to make sure that they can get their deliveries, that we minimize the amount of parking that might be taken next to their businesses. Basically, we're in close communication with businesses throughout design and through construction. Ideally, no one will be surprised by what's occurring there.
Thank you very much.
The engineer's estimate for this project is $5.35 million with a high level of confidence. We are hoping to advertise the project in January and begin construction around May. The construction duration would be about one, or it will be 1 year. And that is it. Any questions? That picture on the right is actually at the Kenton neighborhood, kind of downtown area, famous statue in the area.
I do want to say that we will not be working in that area.
Great.
Just a comment. First of all, thank you, as always, for a superb presentation.
Yeah.
We had a presentation yesterday on what we called park sustainability, and we looked at the fact that we have the Parks Bureau $450 million of capital backlog, and we have an operating gap. And we explored various options going forward for addressing that, and we looked at three options. One was an option that locked in a permanent decline scenario. A second was what I'll call a status quo option, and a third was a reinvestment option. The challenge that we face in parks is that we've not always received our fair share of general fund resources, and fees don't keep up for the balance of our needs as costs continue to go up. So we looked at a number of options, and the council has directed us to do some more due diligence in looking at new revenue measures. The utilities that Commissioner Fritz and I have the honor of leading have the benefit of a dedicated revenue stream. And what that means is that we get a level of predictable funding over time to invest in infrastructure. And I want to just reflect on that for a moment. There are stories that we read all the time around the country of failing municipal infrastructure around their utilities. We read about system failure. We read about botched privatization plans. We read about how other communities are struggling to maintain a water and sewer infrastructure and to fund it. Well, thanks to the generosity of our ratepayers, we have a system that allows us to pay for our needs as we go along. But I also want to acknowledge that a number of years ago, Director Jordan proposed something that I think was very important. And he said, yes, we have brought rates down from for BES from somewhere between 6 and 7% down to 3%. And yes, we could technically bring those rates down a little bit further. But what if we held steady at those rates for a while and invested in overhauling our infrastructure so that in 10 years we had a sustainable infrastructure? So that in 10 years when we got calls for service, it wasn't because of a catastrophic failure, but because something needed a little tweaking. What if we actually invested in building a 21st century sewer and stormwater system around the community and invested in every part of our community? Well, with strong council support, that's the plan we've embarked on. And this is now one of a number of presentations that have come to council where whole neighborhoods have been identified for upgrades. This is not sexy work, and we also know that it is very disruptive to the people who live in these neighborhoods and the businesses in these neighborhoods. But the long-term payoff to our city is akin to the investment we're making in the Bull Run watershed. Under Commissioner Fritz's leadership, we've made some historic commitments to protect the Bull Run watershed and our water supply and the quality of our water for generations. None of those are easy decisions. Under Director Jordan's leadership at BES, we have come up with a plan over the next 10 years to literally reinvest in our sewer and stormwater system and be able to bring it to a level of compliance, which is really unprecedented for other peer cities. So I want to acknowledge that. I want to thank the ratepayers. I want to acknowledge that we have a different funding model that allows us to do it. Parks and PBOT don't have those funding models, and so we keep falling behind in terms of our capital maintenance. But we have a chance to do something unique in this city on the water and the sewer stormwater side, and that is make the kind of investments that allow us to get ahead of the curve and protect our resources. And again, these are not necessarily the hot button issues of the day, although I would say the Bull Run watershed is probably captures more attention than the sewer lines underneath our roads. But I want to acknowledge the work that this council and the bureaus have done over the last number of years. And I look forward to celebrating with the community when we're able to step back and say that we have literally transformed our system. And thank you for that investment. So nice work.
Very good. Any public testimony on this item?
Yes, three people have signed up.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate it.
Charles Bridge Crane Johnson, Maggie, and Jim Wittenberg.
Come on up.
They will be the last three people who testify before Thanksgiving this year.
Yeah.
Jim, why don't you come forward?
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. I can see the clock fine. It hasn't started yet. Charles Bridge Crane Johnson for the record. And it's good to be up here seeing you talk about progress on the 83-year-old sewers and to have seen it happening in other places. After y'all go home, quite often there's trucks downtown from Iron Horse doing this linerless stuff where they don't have to tear up the downtown streets. And equitably, not just downtown, but also east of 82nd, and fortunately another location where the boulders have gone down from ODOT near 83rd and Multnomah, just south of 84. It was interesting to note the that we're talking about sewers and Nextdoor.com. Some people would say that Nextdoor.com is a sewer, especially when you look at the way they talk about some of their neighbors experiencing addiction crisis and other problems. But it was interesting to note that on page 4, I don't know if you partnered with the Office of Community Life or whatever, but there's a very interesting assessment of the three neighborhoods, Portsmouth, Kenton, Arbor Lodge, where you talk about the diversity in those neighborhoods. And I hope that that research will be shared with other bureaus as we look forward to doing a better job on the equity strategy. As Commissioner Fish noted, we're coming up on Thanksgiving. It's hard to believe that it was 399 years ago that England sent us a bunch of religious extremists. Last century, they did better, and they just sent us Amanda Fritz.
That's a really good line.
How'd you think so?
You saved your best for last.
Thank you. And I still haven't been 47, but there's no need for it. This is a reasonable investment for a neighborhood outside the central zone. To see them getting $5 million worth of sewer work is a little bit encouraging. We need more encouragement, but it's a start.
Maggie, why don't you go first? Jim, okay. Jim has a longer speech, and it will probably be unrelated to this matter.
Okay, so this is about Maggie Portland Homeless Town Hall. This is about environmental services coming to you and trying to justify why they need to redo this dilapidated sewer. Okay, well, you know, when I came to you guys and I said, you know, there's MRSA and bed bugs and lice in the Salvation Army, you didn't seem to care. Did you know that MRSA causes pneumonia? And all, everyone in Salvation Army, they all had pneumonia. We're talking about the environmental services people coming up here and talking about, you know, let's get ahead of this curve, fish, do you know, because this is all CDC stuff.
What do you mean by CDC?
Pardon?
What do you
CDC
mean?
Is, you know, the Communicable Disease, you know, Center for Disease Control. So, which, you know, you guys turned a blind eye and just kept funding the Salvation Army over and over as every single person in there got pneumonia, had to go get antibiotics, got MRSA on their feet. The laundry didn't work. The showers were overflowing. Bathrooms were shut down for months at a time. And if you look at articles and records in newspapers and records by the CDC, they will tell you that MRSA happens because of unsanitary conditions, that of those that of the type that exist, like in the Salvation Army. And if you, Ted, like to go on camera and have the Salvation Army sit behind you, you know, because you guys are so close, and if you, Amanda Fritz, like to turn a blind eye because obviously you're from, you know, the UK and you want to support your corporate business partner there. I just think it's unconscionable that not only do we not have enough bathrooms for homeless people, but you're just also continuing these types of shelter conditions. Right now we have a bed bug issue in the Willamette Center. Like, it's completely futile for the people to go in there and spray because all our shit's all over the floor, and, you know, they make us bag it up, but then everybody's still, you know, their stuff is still full of bed bugs, and it's so overcrowded that everyone's going to get pneumonia again. So what do you have to say? You know, this is environmental services that you brought up here. That's what I would like environmental services to respond to.
All right. Well, I think they've heard you, and thank you for your testimony.
Mayor Jim Wittenberg, now lives in Salem.
Well,
but
he's
visiting family here, and actually had an unfortunate incident. I think today or yesterday, where he was almost run over.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah, on the Mayor Wheeler and Amanda and Nick, my streets that I frequent quite often are Broadway and Widler on 15th Avenue. I have a prayer group I go to over there in the mornings. And again, today I was going across in the crosswalk from the what's that big coffee place they have here and sell coffee all the time?
Pete's?
It was across the street over here.
Starbucks.
Starbucks. Starbucks had an old shop there, and then across the street is a fish place. But the first lane was empty. The second lane had a big truck in it, and the third lane had a big truck in it. Well, I got this far across the street to the first big truck. The second big truck didn't see me, and he just came this far from running over me because he jumped off the light as soon as it turned green. And he fortunately stopped in time, or I might have been another statistic here in town. And what I'm trying to say to you quite is I've lived here 63 years now in Portland. I moved here in, well, I may have my numbers wrong. I moved here in 1963 with my wife. We moved here from Corvallis. And it was a nice little town, and I didn't have to worry about traffic or shootings or any of those things. I worked downtown here 10th and Washington in the pharmacy, down here at the Portland Medical Center Pharmacy. But it was a quiet little town then. It only had about 300,000 people around. Now I think I saw a figure of 680-some thousand people in Portland. I mean, this is a big city now. And I think that I have spent most of the last 3 years trying to talk to the police traffic division about the traffic in this town. I'm afraid, I'm terrified of the traffic. None of you tried to go across the street too often on a walker, because if you do, you know what it's like out there. You're open season for the big trucks and the buses and the giant truck. I mean, I've been close to death many times here in this on Broadway, on Widener, and on MLK Street, and I've never seen a policeman stop anybody out there. And I don't know what they're doing, but I suppose maybe they're playing a game or looking for drug traffickers or something. But I just don't want to be. I don't want to end my life under the wheels of a truck. I've lived here 80 years now. I've been in Oregon, and we have things. I still have things I want to do, you know, like change the property tax system, which I think is so antiquated. It's just bizarre. The last thing is when I went to the 1968 convention in Republican convention in Miami. I remember a guy standing up there saying, "A million here or a million there, and pretty soon we'll have some real money to talk about." And that was 1968. And now we're talking about $5 million it doesn't seem to matter. But my dad would turn over his grave if he heard a $5 million project. He couldn't understand that. And I see the old statement now that we turn into our fathers and our mothers as we get older, and we do. We do.
Jim, thank you for joining us, and happy holiday.
Okay, thank you. I just want to tell you, I want to tell you who I'm for this weekend. This
what do you think I'm wearing green and yellow for?
I found this, and
that's very, very subtle.
I couldn't resist it.
Very subtle.
That's great.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like to say for the record that we don't want to see him under a truck either.
No, we great. Definitely don't. Happy Thanksgiving to all three of you. Thanks for being here again. Appreciate it. Thank you, Maggie.
As president.
All right, any further discussion on this item before I move it? This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Next item, please, Keelan, is 1096.
Accept an FY 2019 State Homeland Security Program grant in the amount of $31,157 from the Oregon Department of Emergency Management to enhance emergency preparedness by providing emergency equipment to assist vulnerable Portlanders in the event of a disaster.
Very good. And colleagues, as a reminder, this is a second reading. It was brought forward by Commissioner Hardesty last week, and we have heard both a presentation and testimony on this item. Is there any further business? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted, and we are adjourned.
Mayor. Happy